Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, brothers and sisters, and welcome to Us Lifting Us, Economic Development Cooperative, Thursday evening, Dare to Win, the Ulu Economic Empowerment Plan. This is our Thursday night talk show that we have every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And we welcome you to the show, and thank you for joining us this evening. The question that we will be discussing and starting out with this evening is concerning what is a very apparent racial wealth gap that we are all aware of and that we know truly exists here in this country and that affects our community. The question is, can the African Americans' hard work and hard work ethic and gaining college degrees and PhDs and other types of credentials, can that type of credentialing and hard work ethic close that racial wealth gap that we're aware that exists? Brother Shabaka, who is also a member of the board of directors along with me on Us Lifting Us, he says no, and he's going to be joining us this evening to answer that question. So stay with us. We appreciate having you, and we look forward to gaining his insight as well as discussing many other topics.
What's happening, CC? They still call it the White House, but that's a temporary condition, too. Can you dig it, CC? To each his reach, and if I don't cop, it ain't mine to have. But I'll be reaching for you, because I love you, CC. Right on. There's a lot of chocolate cities around. We've got Newark, we've got Gary. Somebody told me we got L.A. And we're working on Atlanta. You're the capital.
Daddy loves
you. Get down.
Daddy loves
you. Moving in on you.
Daddy loves
you. Can't you feel my breath?
Daddy loves
you. All up around your neck. Hey, CC. They say you jive and game and can't be changed. But on the positive side, you're my piece of the rock and I love you, CC. Can you dig it? Hey, we didn't get our 40 acres and a mule, but we did get you, CC. Yeah. Gaining on you. Moving in around you. God bless CC and his vanilla suburbs.
All right. Once again, welcome and thank you for joining Us Lifting Us, Economic Development Cooperative, on our Thursday evening talk show, Dare to Win, Dare to Be Successful with Cooperative and Family Economics. We will be discussing this evening what is happening with this wealth gap that so obviously exists here in our country. We'll have some explanation around that and also delve into whether or not the African American who gains credentialing, whether it's a PhD, a college degree, or some other type of degrees, whether or not that combined with the hard work ethic will help to dissolve and to move that wealth gap. But first off, we want to thank you for joining us and welcoming you to Dare to Win. The number that you can call for those of you who would like to join us via your phone, 929-477-2789, and then press 1 on your dial. If you would like to make a comment or ask a question and join in and be part of our discussion. Once again, introducing myself, I am Sister Nanana, and I am a member of the Us Lifting Us Board of Directors. And we have Brother Shabaka, who's also on the board, joining us this evening. Would you like to say some words of welcome to our listening audience, Brother Shabaka?
Yes, Sister Nanana, thank you so much. Thank Ulu and your listening audience for this invitation to share. I hope that we have a very meaningful discussion, and you chose a very significant and interesting topic of the wealth gap, in spite of the fact that we may have equal access to educational opportunities. We still find that African Americans far behind the general population or the white population in terms of wealth. One of
Most
the reasons I
mm-hmm.
yeah, I'm
go
sorry.
Ahead,
go
Brother
ahead, sister.
Yeah,
I was going
to say most definitely. I don't think there's anyone in our community or anyone on the call this evening who could deny that there is a wealth gap. And so I'm just going to invite you to start right in and give us some of the basics around what this wealth gap looks like, and share with us your thought and your idea as to how that wealth gap, or is it possible to resolve that wealth gap?
Well, unfortunately, it's not. It's very difficult. And one of the reasons, even if you have two, three, four jobs, or obtaining a higher degree credentialing, as you said, and maybe making a six-figure salary, you find out, or we find out, that the wealth gap is not decreased. According to Professor Sandy Doherty of Harvard University, what has happened is that Africans have been conditioned, you know, to focus on getting credential, getting a job, and then using that as a springboard to make huge income, all right, or big salaries. And this has not worked for us because income, salaries, does not equate to wealth. But we're led to believe that, you know, making $100,000, $200,000 is wealth. Well, according to most economists, how wealth is defined, and this is extremely important, is the differences or the difference between what we own, property, and what we owe, debt, liability.
Wait a minute, Brother Shabaka. What I hear you saying is that there is a difference between wealth and income. So can you Can you repeat that again? Because, you know, I would think that income equates to wealth. So
yes,
am I on the wrong track with that?
Yeah, it doesn't equate, and a lot of us believe that income equates to wealth, but it doesn't. As I gave you that little formula that the economists use, is that what you owe, property, and property could be assets, a home, a house, property, a farm, a factory, minus, take away from that, what you owe, debt, liabilities, loans that haven't matured yet. Those are the kind of things. And so when you subtract that, all right, you get your net worth. For an example, suppose I own a factory that's worth $20 million. That's nice. I got a factory that's worth $20 million, but I'm in debt $10 million. All right, so when you take the value of my factory, you know, that's producing something that's been assessed at $20 million, subtract the $10 million worth of debt, actually my net worth or my wealth is $10 million. On the other hand, if you take income, income is nothing but a flow of receipts that one receives from earnings by doing work, either as an individual or as a business, in the exchange for providing goods or services or through investment capital, and I'll speak a little bit about that in a minute. So therefore, when I say a flow of, you know that we work, we get paid, all right, then there's a period of time. If we work, then we get paid again. All right, then we work, we get paid again over a period of time. So that's a flow of receipts that we receive, all right, usually in the form of the nation's currency. In this case, it would be the dollar. Or if we have in the process of purchasing stocks or bonds, bonds are just debts of the government. Bonds is a purchasing an ownership in a business, and it accrues interest, all right, then the interest that is earned on those stocks and bonds can be viewed as income. But notice, I didn't say anything about it being wealth, although there is a process by which you can transfer back and forward, and we can also discuss that.
Well, let me just interject something else right here. From what you're saying, Brother Shabaka, what I'm gathering is that as long as we are in a position whereby we are simply accumulating what you call receipts or this U.S. or government currency, as long as we are doing that, no matter what level the income is or the salary is, we still don't have wealth. Am I hearing that correctly?
That's exactly correct, because wealth is associated with mostly properties that you have, and usually those properties can be transferred or are inherited, you know, by your descendants or the next generation. You can't pass on income. For an example, if I sign a contract to work for $200,000 a year, and at the end of 6 months, let's say something happens to me, I die or get incapacitated in which I can no longer work the next 6 months, I cannot pass that income to my daughter or my son or anybody. All right. But on the other hand, if I have a certain amount of wealth, assets, property, all right, through a will or through state law, there's a process by which that wealth that I currently have can be transferred to my offspring. Well, you cannot do the same thing with income.
Wow. So it sounds to me like there is a relearning process that needs to take place for many of us to truly understand that difference between wealth and income, and hopefully to get more over into the side where we are actually accumulating wealth and passing wealth on.
That's right. I
because
had quoted.
That,
Yeah, go ahead, please. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying, mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I quoted Professor Doherty, an African who teaches at Harvard Economics. All right. He said in 2014 that the average middle income black family had an average wealth of $8 as compared to the middle income white family. This is in Boston now, in 2014, had an average wealth of $250. Now, thinking we have a net wealth of $8, we're a middle income family. Whether you're middle income, you're middle income. That means you make a certain amount of salary. So when we compare the salaries, yeah, we were good with salaries, but we find out that when we look at our net worth or wealth, the African family in Boston had a net wealth of $8 as compared to $250,000 for the average middle class white family. So
that's
something
deep.
We need to think about.
Yeah, that's a big gap, and let's address that a little bit more, because I'd like to hear more about, you know, how we got into that position and then, you know, start delving into what we need to do to move out of it. So we're going to take a little music break here, a station break, and then when we come back, let's talk more about this, of what needs to happen to help us move out of it. But I'd still like to hear more about how we got into that position in the first place. And for those out there in the listening audience, if you care to call in and be a part of this discussion, 929-477-2789 is the number to call, and then press 1 on your dial. 929-477-2789. All right, thank you, and we'll be back with you in just a few minutes. With you again, Uplifting Us Economic Development Cooperative on the Dare to Win Thursday night radio broadcast, where we explore providing. provocative and interesting topic from our community, and also look at what the solution is, the economic solution and the plan that ULU, Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative, has to contribute. So, Brother Shabaka, going back to that subject that you were sharing with us concerning the difference between wealth and income and the disparity, the very obvious disparity that exists within our community, comparing our community to the white or the Caucasian community. Can you give us some more information around that, maybe some history on how this all got started and what that looks like?
Yes, what I was referencing before was Boston, but what I described is all over the country. You know, there's that disparity. And when I gave you Boston, because Boston is a northeastern town, supposedly affluent, yet we see that when we look and compare middle-class whites with middle-class blacks, they have such a tremendous advantage and gap. But to deal with your question of what is the origin, well, we all know about the enslavement period. All right, we didn't own anything, we had nothing. But after the Civil War, or rather during the Civil War, the latter part of the Civil War, in fact, it was January 16, 1865, as Sherman was making his burn and destroy route to Savannah from Atlanta. He issued, this is William T. Sherman, who was the Union general at that time. He issued a special field order number 15, which confiscated the land of the Confederates as the Union was progressing. And that land that he was confiscated was basically from Charleston, South Carolina, all the way down to Jacksonville, Florida, about 30 miles from the coast inland. All right, so, and that comprised about maybe 400,000 acres. And what this was, he was turning this land over to the Africans who had been enslaved, all right, who was following him from the northern part of Georgia as he was making his way south, southeast. All right, and he was allocating in 40-acre lots. And then he, in addition to that, he had ordered that mules be given to each family, all right, so that they could use that and use that as to make the land valuable by using it in farming. And so that's where we really get the term 40 acres and a mule from. It was him. Now, under pressure from his own party, Lincoln went along with this thing. But, you know, Lincoln got assassinated. And consequently, when Johnson came into power, Johnson rescinded this and turned the land back over to the white planters, primarily because to bring the planters back into the fold of the Union. And remember now, the South fed the North. It fed them food and it fed them the cash crops, sugar cane, cotton, and particularly cotton, and which fed the industry of the North, which is why the North became extremely, extremely valuable. Now, a lot of lands, so this happened across the South, not only in Georgia, all right, and then Africans began to own huge lands that was turned over to us, and then Johnson rescinded. Some of the land that was not turned over, all right, what whites did, former owners, basically got the Ku Klux Klan burned, destroyed, looted, killed, lynched, did everything they could, which caused a migration of Africans from the South and North, which is why you find a lot of second generation of Africans in Chicago, in Indianapolis, in Cleveland, all right, and Detroit, on the Midwestern side, and then, of course, Washington, Baltimore, Philadelphia, up to New York on the eastern side, coming from Georgia and South Carolina. Right. Now, when they went to these places, they went with what they had on their backs, only to the factories that the North had to work as laborers for salaries or wages, mostly wages at that time, because they did not have the mm-hmm. professional skills to acquire salaries, all right, which is income. And as we just discussed before, income does not equate to wealth. The people who had the wealth was in the north, who owned the factories, in the south, who had regained ownership of the land and terrorized us. Now, in addition to that, if we still stayed in the south where we had a lot of land, all right, we had the forces of the state against us, as well as the economic order that existed there. For an example, if you have the land, you can't do anything with the land if you can't plant seeds, if you don't have the machinery to plow and to grow crops. And we couldn't get the loans. Even though we had the land as assets, we couldn't get the loans. They didn't loan us anything. We couldn't get the machinery. We got nothing. White could get those things. So that increased the value of the land that they had, all right, therefore increasing their assets and, of course, subtracting whatever they borrowed from the bank in order to get the feeds that they needed, the seeds and what they needed in order to plant, all right, that gave their wealth. But we had no wealth because we weren't afforded mm-hmm. the same opportunities. And when we went to the north, we only worked as laborers. All right, so we didn't get the benefit of wealth working in the factories. And that has precipitated up to the present time. Most of our people, there are few that do have land and do have ownership of factories and are producing. But for the vast majority of us, we're still wage and salary workers. Even though we might live the American dream, so to speak, you know, two-car garage in the suburbs, you know, what have you, we are in debt. We're in debt from our mortgage. You know, we're in debt on the car. We are in debt. And so even when you look at the asset of having a home, all right, still the amount of money that we paid for the home, the amount of money that we paid for the car, the amount of money that we paid for anything, all right, far exceeds the value that we have in terms of that. And so as you see in Boston in 2014, they only had $8 worth of debt. I mean, $8 worth of wealth. And you find that all over the United States, all over anywhere. Go ahead, sister.
Yeah, I was just saying, it sounds to me like what you're sharing is that there is definitely a historical perspective that needs to be taken into consideration as to why many in our community and our communities overall are in a disparate position as far as wealth is concerned, and that almost 100% of that stems from slavery. So
slavery.
Yep. Okay. I see what you're saying there. Even afterwards as well, because we were denied, as you said, loans. We were denied opportunities to compete for even higher wage earning paying jobs. So that all helps, I think, to give a good context in terms of how we got to where we are right now.
But there were some positive spots, if I may interrupt. Excuse me for interrupting. There were some positive spots. All right. Because in the South we were forced into segregation, some communities did pool their resources together. All right. They made income, and then they use the income collectively to get the things that they individually could not get. And so we see a Tulsa, Oklahoma, extremely wealthy and prospering, come up. And we also see in the Raleigh-Durham area, similar, and Florida and parts of Georgia. So we see those things happening because we was forced through segregation. We had to do it. We had no other choice. They wouldn't allow us. And we did it quite well. And, in fact, we did it so well that the population of whites became jealous and it started a new wave of violence, all right, of confiscation of land, of what I call ethnic cleansing, particularly in the case of Tulsa, where they forced the population to leave, burned and looted and killed, all right, because we were doing it well. And now what we see now is that we are regaining a spirit. Well, how can we address, as you said earlier, the question of this wealth gap? And I think that Ulu has provided a model where we pool our resources now because we have done it before, and it was successful. So if it was successful before, all right, it can possibly be a model of a success today. So
wow.
even though we may have had some failures, we've had some successes, which lays the foundation by which we can move forward. I'm sorry, go ahead, sister. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I just had to say, wow, that is certainly a mouthful and a lot of information that you've just provided, particularly the last few things that you shared about the pooling of the resources and the coming together and how that was beneficial for us in the past. We had proven results from that. And then looking into the future, particularly the plan that Ulu has around pooling resources, that is proving to be beneficial for us now. So I'd like to hear more about that. And I'm going to once again invite anyone who care to make a comment to press 1 on your dial so that we'll know that you're in queue to be part of the conversation. And we're going to take a short music break here. And then we will be back again to have more discussion about how Ulu has put together the new economic paradigm and definitely has an economic empowerment plan that's going to work for us, and also sharing some information about how you can become a member of Ulu. And I see we do have a guest who would like to make a comment or have a question, and I'm going to ask that guest to be first in line after we have our short music break, and we'll hear what our guest has to say. All right, thank you.
Pastor people can't pass the hitman.
All right. Well, as Brother James Brown so aptly said, let's get on the good foot. All right, Brother Shabaka, let's get back to the dialogue, and let's open the dialogue by opening the line for caller last four digits, 1816. Caller last four digits, 1816. Would you give us your name and where you're calling from, and go ahead with your question or comment?
Yes, greetings. This is Sister Ikena calling from Stone Mountain, Georgia, and I'm a Lulu member. Thank you. And this is an excellent topic. It just really struck me tonight, particularly because as a grandmother and also as a mama whose daughter is graduating from college, I was thinking about this generational wealth. And, you know, it's one of those topics, it stays on most of on our mind, you know, what can we do to create financial stability for our families? And then the next thing you look up and the time is gone and the dreams of the generational wealth has already escaped. And so I'm thinking about it in terms of the succinct advice to give to these recent college graduates, my daughter and her friends. I'm like, you know, if you just do this thing now, in 10 years, this is where you may be, you know, and to the grandchildren who are just four-year-olds now, what are the things that we need to be focused on, because there's so much information and so many different opportunities. I just wondered what your thoughts were about baby steps, small steps that young people can take now, or that as a parent and grandparent that I can take on their behalf, that's setting us in that direction for generational wealth.
All right. Well, thank you, Sister Ikena, for asking that question. And that's certainly a question that opens the door for providing some very salient information about how we can start to prepare for the future. And I'm going to make a response on that, and then I'm going to ask Brother Shabaka for his response as well. In terms of what younger people can start doing right now to start the road for generational wealth, because that's what we need to have, is generational wealth. And thinking or looking in particular at what Ulu has to offer, the first thing I would say is to join and become a member of Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative. ULU offers a winning plan of how we can pool our resources, put our dollars together to develop business opportunities that will benefit entire communities, that will provide future jobs for large numbers in our community, as well as positioning the person who is not only an ULU member, but who is also an ULU investor, providing them with security for themselves as well as future generations. Because what we ask is that after you become a member of ULU, that invest in purchasing units or shares, which then positions you so that you are an owner, an actual business owner. The other thing is that young people who have started families can purchase shares or units in the names of their children, and pass those on so that their children are automatically business owners and can partake of the benefits of those investments as they pay off in the future by being an ULU member and an ULU investor. So those are some of the things that immediately come to my mind. And Brother Shabaka, would you have something that you'd want to add to that?
No, I think you said said it very clearly. If you recall, Sister, I mentioned about Tulsa in particular because I'm a little familiar with their history, and even visited the area. Pool their resources, and you know how the church has been the center of black life in this country. All right, but what the church did, and what entrepreneurs did, was to pool their resources, all right, so cooperatively, all right, such that if they wasn't getting the satisfaction from the European, the white banks, all right, they had sufficient amount to begin to use the resources that they had to start their own businesses, all right, and then reap the rewards of servicing themselves if they were not receiving the kind of help that Western governments give their white populations in particular. So what Sister Nanana is saying, and to you, Sister, out there in northeastern Georgia, what I believe is that if we invest, all right, put our energies, develop those businesses, the businesses are going to hire, all right, people. The people who are hired are also members. All right, so you reap the benefit of being a member, as well as can potentially become an owner. Once you become an owner, what I didn't mention in my talk about wealth was some people puts money into stocks and bonds. All right, bonds being, as you know, debt that the government wishes you to help them out of, and they give you accrued interest at the end of some period, where stocks are basically ownership, partial ownership in a company and business. If the business is doing successful, all right, then you get dividend, which is nothing more than interest, which accrues your way, because the stocks represent your property, your investment, your ownership of a business, or partial ownership of a business. That's ownership of a business. So have to invest it. Ulu is going to be pooling resources, or suggesting you pool resources. You have a democratic process by which you have input into businesses that you think can flourish. All right. Now, remember, I'm saying businesses now, right? I'm not talking about just getting a job and getting income. I'm saying you get businesses. The whole idea of pooling resources is that you create businesses. You create businesses that strategically, all right, will benefit and employ the members of the community that you are from. All right, well, I'm not such a fast food eater. I definitely would probably not suggest that people get involved in too much fast food. But, you know, when you look at our community, you see fast foods throughout. They're making a lot of money. All right, as a consequence of what McDonald's and Burger King and all the rest of them are doing. So we identify what we think is profitable for us and that the landscape that we see, all right, the business will flourish in that landscape. As the business and flourish, we're owners of those businesses, all right, then we profit and benefit. That can be transferred because you have ownership in a business. That means what the business used, the buildings, if it used buildings, If it's virtual, then it has software, you know, property rights and software. So you have all of that can be transferred, all right, to the next generation of folks, all right, for them to continue the prosperity that you now enjoy by, you know, starting it up. I know I talk long on it, but that's the benefit I think that I see in Ulu, is that we're pooling our resources because it was done before in Tulsa. Marcus Garvey did it. All right, but they hit Marcus Garvey, all right, because he was becoming very successful at it, got a steamship and was getting ready to, all right, involve in transport of commerce back and forth between the black world. And that's when they had to hit him.
Well, and I appreciate everything that you shared with us, Brother Shabaka, and thank you so much, Sister Akina, for asking that question. It was a very important one because we do want to encourage younger people to be interested in learning and understanding about family economics, about cooperative economics. We ask you to go to our website, which is usliftingus.com. That's usliftingus.com. Take a look at the website. Take your time. Look at all of the information that's there on the website. And if you are so inclined, and we hope that you will be, that you want to become a member, you can click on the tab for membership and right then and there fill out your membership application so that you can get started on your membership as well as get started on your investment in units, in purchasing a unit. If, in fact, you have questions that you want to ask, you will find on the website that you can click on the Contact Us link and send an email, or you can call 404-592-2780. That's 404-592-2780. And leave your question on our voicemail line, and we guarantee you that your call will be returned and that we will answer your question. We are very serious about moving forward with what we know is a winning plan, and the best example that we can provide for you in terms of the success of ULU and how we are definitely and actively moving forward is Cafe ULU, which has been open about, it's going on 7 months pretty soon, Cafe ULU, which is an Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative business based strictly on the family or cooperative economic model, located in Atlanta, Georgia. The address is 2036 Sylvan Road. That's 2036 Sylvan Road. And everything about Cafe ULU lets you know that this is a business that is focused on providing support for our community. It's ran as a cooperative. Everything about it is structured as a cooperative. All of the hands, the business, the employees, are employee owners of ULU. So we encourage those of you, particularly in the Atlanta area, to stop into Cafe ULU and really support that business. As a matter of fact, those of you who are in the Atlanta area, particularly folks from the Bermuda community, might be interested in knowing that on Friday, August 3rd, from 7 p.m. until midnight, there is going to be a celebration going on at Cafe ULU to commemorate the August 1st emancipation of enslaved Africans in Bermuda. We should never forget that the enslavement of our ancestors took place in many places all around the globe. And Bermuda acknowledges their Emancipation Day that first weekend in August. And in Atlanta this year, part of that celebration is going to be held at Cafe ULU. And so we feel real good about that. So please stop by and help us to continue to celebrate our success and our moving forward with the community of Bermudians who are located in Atlanta. And Brother Shabaka, I think this is probably an opportune time as well for us to say a few words concerning how ULU is moving forward to continue to increase its membership. We have an aggressive strategic plan that we're putting in place right now. Would you care to say a few words about what we're doing in that respect to encourage the growth of the membership in ULU? Brother Shabaka, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm sorry. I stepped away for a minute and just heard your question. I was running back to the phone. Yes, I'm glad that you give me the opportunity to talk. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay. Yes, we are advancing a growth campaign, and the reason for this growth campaign is not in isolation. As I talked about earlier, we saw the impact that happened over 100 years, I mean, 100 years ago, just about, you know, in Tulsa, and people pulling their resources together, and as a consequence of those resources, building an economy. All right, we saw in just a few years prior to that, Marcus Garvey galvanized a lot of people to pool their resources together and develop an economy. All right, so what we're doing is, if that model works and is successful and is needed, and why you say is it needed? Well, little is it known, you know, got 35% of African-American families in the U.S. are below the poverty line. That's why it's needed. All right. But we have the resources because even though we 35% of the population is below the poverty line, we spend $1.3 trillion. That $1.3 trillion go out, pennies come back in. We can't survive that way. It goes out, it doesn't come back in. So our objective in this growth campaign is to get serious minded folks who are aware and sympathize with the move that ULU is making. We want to get 1,000 new members in ULU by March. And our campaign is to attempt to do that, and we feel very comfortable that we can do that. And all we ask is just two things. One, if you yourself has not been to the web page, go to the web page. Read the information that Sister Nanana talked about. Read it carefully. We don't want you to rush through it. Ask questions. Invite someone to these Thursday night programs and listen to the topics that we present. Ask questions. If you're in the Atlanta area, go to Cafe ULU. There is usually a board member or somebody sitting around. After you get your coffee, your wrap, whatever items that you get off the menu, talk to them. Then bring a family member or a friend. Invite them to go to the website. Look over the information. Invite them over your house as you all look at the website. Examine it. See if it makes sense to you. All right? And then invite them to participate in these Thursday night programs. All right, membership is only $50. All right, you use that just getting gas in a couple weeks. If it takes that long for you to gas to last for a couple weeks, so that's our growth campaign. We want to also increase our membership by 2020. We'd like to have at least 1,000 new units. And the units, membership units, are explained on the website. But more importantly, we want you to go to the website. We want you to invite your family members, your friends. Read it over. We want to engage in dialogue with you. Dialogue with us. Debate us if you think it's necessary to debate us. Cooperative economics is the way we have it structured. It's successful. It's new. And it can work. And it is working because we have a business that is already operating, and that's Cafe Ulu. And we're thinking about expanding that. We can't do that without the cooperation of its members and people who are interested in doing the support. I hope I haven't spoken too long, Sister Nananda. Did you want to say anything else
No.
towards that end?
Wonderful. Thank you. And thank you for mentioning the purchase of the units and giving the details about our strategic growth campaign. And once again, increasing our membership by 1,000 members by March of this next year coming up, and increasing the number of units, that is actual ownership units, by 1,000 by the year 2020. It's all very realistic, it's all very doable, and it's all very necessary so that we can position ourselves not to be in the type of situation that Brother Shabaka outlined for us quite well in the beginning of the program, whereby we are involving ourselves primarily with income and not understanding the difference between that and wealth, and we are not positioning ourselves to pass on to future generations. Your membership in Ulu and your purchase of the unit allows you to do both of those. Something else that I think is very important and needs to be said about Ulu is that Ulu is looking forward to having large-scale businesses. We are also a global organization. We have membership all around the globe. I mentioned the membership in Bermuda. We have members in London. We have members in Haiti. We have members in South America. We have members in Ireland. We have members everywhere, and we will have businesses all around the globe as well. So as we are starting to wind down the show this evening, I would like the listeners and our listening audience to visualize and to see themselves as not only members of Ulu, if you're not a member already, but also as a owner of units and as a membership, as a business owner in Ulu, because that will make a significant difference. We appreciate your participation and your dialing into our show. We're here every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. We're on the air for an hour. We have what we believe to be an interesting and eye-opening and provocative subject that we talk about every Thursday, and invite the audience to join in with us. So please pass the word, and the next time you listen to our Thursday night broadcast, which we hope will be next Thursday, we ask you to bring someone with you to the broadcast, so that you can have some dialogue with that individual afterwards about what you heard, and that the two of you can participate together in the Ulu broadcast. Thank you so very much. We're signing off right now. And once again, our motto on our Thursday night broadcast is Dare to Win. We dare to be bold. We dare to step out there. We dare to say that Ulu, Uplifting Us Economic Development Cooperative, has a truly empowering and an economic empowerment plan that is successful and that will continue to be successful and that will move us forward in the future. So thank you so much. for joining us this evening. We appreciate it, and we look forward to having you back with us next week. Same time, same station, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you.
This is Ted Lana from Arrested Development, and I come here tonight to give thanks to the rain. So brothers and sisters, please put down your umbrellas. You won't be needing those today. Look to the clouds with the most rain coming from it. But without the rain, there's no me and there's no you. I said a trip drop, trip drop. Viva, bum, bum, bum. Trip drop. Let it rain, let God's water feed me. The water of life, mentally rinsing me. Physically drenching me, most of frowning upon your arrival, but I need you for survival. And when you fall in my community, yeah, I run outside to properly greet you. Let it rain, take my pain, I'm glad to meet you. Fill my eyes with a colorful rainbow. Every drop that hits me fills me with unmeasurable and minor security. Knowing my God acknowledges me as this each drop of rain is aimed toward me. My Lord, thanks for life. My Lord, thanks for life.
Thank you,
yeah.
My rain.
It's rainy revolution. It's rainy solution. It's rainy revolution. It's rainy revolution. It's rainy revolution. It's rainy revolution. It's rainy revolution.